John, welcome to breakfast here on 2OCR.
Oh, thanks, mate. Thanks for the invite.
So what do the proposed NDIS reforms look like? How do these independent assessments differ from the previous method of determining eligibility?
Well, at the moment, mate, there's the planning process. So you've got the eligibility process whereby you have to provide evidence of functional limitations and how that impacts on everyday living. So how it impacts on independent living at home, engaging with community, so on and so forth. And all of that requires evidence primarily from medical professionals, so that's occupational therapists, physiotherapists and other allied health specialists, but also medical practitioners. And many of those practitioners already have a relationship with their patients' clients and actually have a really good understanding on the impact that disability is having on that particular person. The independent assessments are actually disconnected from those people and don't even know those persons. Furthermore, the independent assessments toolkit, from my professional opinion, has not been tested for its cultural competence and respectability for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
So what are the implications of these reforms and why do you see it as being incompetent effectively? How will it impact the accessibility?
Well, firstly, the independent assessment pilot only had 1% of its pilot participants being from an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander background. So that's around about 4, maybe 5 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. That was in pilot one. Then pilot two happened but was delayed because of the coronavirus. But pilot two only had a total of 99 participants and only about 3 or 4 of those were of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander background. So the actual pilot, in my scholarly opinion, was actually flawed from the very start. Also, there has been limited to no involvement of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the whole consultations and discussions relating to the independent assessments. So overall, mate, I see the independent assessments as a cost-cutting exercise. Mm. And worse, it is further medicalising the experience of disability. The experience of disability actually has a very strong cultural and social influence in how we actually experience disability. So for example, me, I have an ENT condition called rhinitis, which impacts significantly on the quality of my hearing. In my house, I don't experience disability because my house is actually hearing sensitive for me. Also, in terms of my Aboriginal background, I've got Aboriginal art from relatives and from friends and so on and so forth. But when I go to say into town or go into catch a train, my hearing is really, really bad. So the experience of disability is reflective of the actual diversity of environments. The independent assessment does not consider that. The toolkit is very strong on medicalising the experience of disability. Now, the original protest and evolution of the NDIS was to break away from the medicalisation of disability and actually focus strongly on the environment, that's the built environment, and also the natural environment and the home environment of the person.
Yeah. So, for example, if you were to get assessed and this independent assessment comes up that you have poor quality, for example, are there ways that people can challenge to resolve these issues? Or is it still, you know, restrictive based on, as you say, these kind of cost-cutting sounding measures?
Well, the NDIA does have its dispute resolution policy in place, and as far as I know, that still exists. But the planning process, so the actual planners who work for the NDIA, do not have the requisite skills to actually assess and judge a person's experience of disability, and therefore the support needs that they need. So, mm-hmm. For example, a couple of years ago, Flinders University did a study, an evaluation of the NDIS, and they concluded that about a third of NDIS package holders were as well off as they were before they got their plan, but between 10 and 20% of NDIS package holders were actually worse off. And of those two groups, they consist primarily of people living in very remote and remote regions and also Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So if that's happening with the current process, the current planning process, and that report also notes that the NDIS workers, the local area coordinators, are struggling to engage in supports and create an appropriate plan for Aboriginal people. If you have that with the planning process, then and then the independent assessment pilot has not considered the voices of Aboriginal people, then we're going to make the whole NDIS eligibility and planning process worse for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, because the diversity of experience of disability between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people is very different.
Yeah. Well, what changes would you like to see to ensure the NDIS is more culturally sensitive and accessible to Indigenous people? And what timescale would those have to be implemented on based on the progress through these trials in its possible path to becoming a national rollout?
Well, the biggest challenge that we've had with the NDIS was that it was rolled out too fast. The rollout was incredibly quick. John Walsh, who actually drafted the Disability Care Australia report, advised everyone, and I was there when he said it, that we should not roll this out too quickly. We should take our time. And because it was rolled out very, very quickly, primarily for political reasons, not for the needs of people with disability, we ended up with a lot of these holes in the road during a journey that the vehicle has hit. So what we really need to do is focus on the quality of what's happening at the moment and smooth out the eligibility and planning process, rather than having independent assessments delivered and operated by allied health professionals. Mm. So there needs to be greater focus on the experience of disability and greater training and recruitment measurements and also retention processes in the NDIA and in the local area coordinator workforce and also the community connectors and the ECEIs, to actually have them appropriately trained and have them improve the retention and the skill set of that particular cohort of staff, because there is serious staff turnover in the NDIA, there is serious staff turnover in the local area coordinators and community connectors, and there isn't enough workforce investment that makes it a culturally competent and safe environment for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to get appropriate plans.
Yeah, I think it's obviously a very important issue, and I think that laundry list of things that could be improved is super worth noting. Associate Professor John Gilroy, thank you so much for joining us here on Breakfast on 2SER.
No worries, mate. I'll call him up anytime.
You're listening to 2SER. That was Associate Professor John Gilroy from the University of Sydney speaking to us about how the NDIS proposed independent assessments will impact upon Indigenous communities.